Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, Thursday, March 28th. We have three items on our agenda for work session, and I'm going to take them in the order in which the agenda is printed. First, I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2130, LRO.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. There's three bills scheduled for work session today related to property tax, farming equipment, some food processing, and hay baling. And since they all have some connection, thought we'd step back a little bit and look at how different property is treated in the state. And you'll forgive me if I step back a little far. So when I was first looking at this issue, I started thinking about the kind of questions that have popped up in the public hearings in this committee, which is sort of, some of them were related to what is treated as real property and what is treated as personal property. And as technology has evolved in farming, things that used to be small and incremental are bigger. Maybe moved indoors, questions of what does it mean to be affixed or secured to the ground. And so I started Googling and trying to find out what kind of farming equipment people are using. And so some of these pictures represented to me what seems like maybe movement or overlap in farming and processing equipment. So the top picture is clearly movable. It's a semi-truck, but then it's affixed to this big ramp structure, and they're dumping cranberries into this sort of processing arena. And then the other picture, which kind of goes the other direction to me, cattle used to be maybe like housed in a large barn, and now these are these little individual canopies for lots and lots of cattle. So the way that farming is done is changing, and the structures and the mechanisms that are being used are changing a little bit. And so one of the questions that came up in public hearing are things like seed cleaning. And some of the processes that used to be done in the field, so that top picture is like a small field seed cleaner. And then there's these seed cleaners that are inside a building, and they're quite a bit larger than the mobile seed cleaner on wheels. And then there's other seed cleaners that are on wheels, but they're sort of for hire, and they're inside of a truck, and then the truck would come and do some of this. So these are just the different types of property that might be under consideration in some of these bills.
Oh, I see a field trip coming up.
I was hoping you'd say that. So some of the concepts today, I'm going to talk about first the property classification, so how it's treated in statute, and then assessment and taxation, and some of that from statute, and also on the ground from the county assessors, and then exemptions, and then we have the bills that are up for today. So two questions that have come up in this committee that you might recall while we're going through this presentation is, what does a typical farm pay taxes on versus what wouldn't a farm pay taxes on, which is, what are the exemptions? And so then the question of the exemptions that come into farm and food processing industries, and how are those different? Okay, so when I started looking at this issue for these bills, one of the things I noticed that there is the language in statute says all real property within the state and all tangible personal property in the state shall be subject to assessment and taxation. And so there's, to me, a couple key things there. One of the things is, we're talking about real property and tangible personal property. And so, of course, I want to know what that is. And the other component is, at the bottom of that statement, we're talking about assessment and taxation. So you might be subject to assessment, which is estimating the value of your property, but you might not have to pay taxes on that, so you might be exempt. So this is talking about assessment and taxation. That differs from intangible personal property, which is not subject to assessment and taxation. So the way that I think about this when I was approaching it is in statute, intangible personal property, except for some things that are provided. And if Rep. Smith Warner was here, she would remember the gigabit bill. And so talking about intangible property is sort of things we can't touch. There's goodwill and brand name recognition, and tend to think of real property as things that we can touch. And so the baseline for real property and tangible personal property in this state is that it's taxed. The baseline for intangible personal property is that it's not taxed and not subject to assessment. And then there's all the variances and exceptions that we have from those things.
Representative Rushkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Jamie, I probably not pertinent to this discussion, but just with tangible versus intangible, and I think I've asked LRO this before, but where does software fall in this line? So if you're developing software, it's not something you can touch unless it's in a box, I guess. But most software is no longer in a box. So I just, and if you don't have the answer today, that's fine. I'm just, my mind just goes there because I used to be a software developer.
That's, thank you, Rep. Rushkie.
And again, I know you're, we're focusing on farm equipment today, but.
I'll look into that, and that's not something I have the answer today. In terms of the functionality, that also might be separate from the brand name. Right. I did think about, in the context of farming, something sort of ethereal, like intangible property, is the question of the branding or image of organic farming versus regular farming, and the change in the value of that. The product, and so that's a sort of a related question, but I will check into that.
Representative Rushkie?
Yes.
It occurs to me that I think it was very insightful that you asked that question. A few weeks ago, I was talking to a dairy farmer, and he showed me an app on his phone, and he was checking on the well-being of one of his cows.
Yep.
So what if the dairy farmer actually starts developing some software because he's got an idea for a better app.
Right.
And now he owns software that he's going to try to sell to other farmers. So they're
thank you for taking my junked idea and bringing it into the conversation. Thank you for saving me.
Yeah, there's not, there could be software involved here.
Okay.
Okay, so we tend to think of real property, and it's also defined in statute as sort of really fixed or really large things, and specifically that includes the land itself and building structures, machinery, equipment, and the statute states erected upon or fixed to the land. And so those kind of things have come into the conversation when talking about farming equipment, whether it's real or personal property. And so when we're talking about personal property, the statute says we're talking about tangible personal property here. And they use some really fun terms like chattels, but things that we think of as movable, tradable, movable, goods, livestock, vehicles. And so the general idea of what's personal property and what's real property, not drilling down into all the specifics. So these are examples that are given in statute. So now we start to have a general idea of what is real and what is not. What is personal property?
Jamie, is there, do you know whether there are any further explanations of what movable means or any court decisions? Because generally, you think a stick-built house is not movable,
mm-hmm.
but some stick-built houses, when it's decided it's time to move them off that piece of property to somewhere else, can be moved. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult, but there's a way to do it.
Chair Nathanson, okay, I will say that in terms of farming, that and I have spoken to LC and some attorneys, I'm sure would have more commentary, that there have been cases that have addressed some of those issues recently, and that particularly relates to farming. But in talking with some of the county assessors, we have things like mobile homes that are often considered personal property, but once it gets into a question of like how well, if they're affixed to the foundation and then they have hard plumbing and these kinds of things, you're moving into more real property. And the question of whether something is, and I guess in part this is why I'm showing some of the pictures in this presentation, is the question of size doesn't necessarily make it real property if it's very large. But just because it's small doesn't also mean that it's personal property. So we have some things that are extremely large and they are still very movable.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I tried to get this slide to show up one at a time, but I couldn't figure that out. So the whole thing is up here, and I'm just gonna start from the left-hand side and say that, so if we're trying to look at things like the food processing equipment and farming equipment and decide what's real property, and what's personal property, and the relevance of that is what's taxable, what's not, what's exempt in current statute, and the policy considerations around those things. So if we start with all property, down to the bottom, intangible property versus tangible property. Intangible property, and now Refreshki has brought up a good point, but I was not planning on talking about that for today's presentation. So looking mostly at tangible property and dividing those two types of dividing that type of property into real and personal property. So on the real side of things, I separated these into residential and business and commercial property, and we tend to think of we're very familiar with our own residential property, and it has a real market value, but then when it's taxed, the sort of end of the line is it's taxable at its maximum assessed value. But when you, if you think of a farm as a local business, then if we have business and commercial, and we split those into sort of the farm and non-farm, one of the questions or some of the questions that have come up about what do farms pay taxes on, what's exempted. So farmland, especially assessed, and the home sites based on income and farm usage. And then there's the farming equipment. The land itself would be considered real property. And then when we look at non-farm, non-farm businesses their real property is also taxable. But of course, as we know in statute, there's lots of exemptions for different types of businesses, sometimes to encourage businesses to locate in a certain area that has blight or something like this. We might offer property tax exemptions. When it comes to personal property, and again, splitting things into residential and business and commercial, all the things that are sort of in your household that are personal, they're not taxable. So your table and your laptop that's not used for business, the things in your home, those are not taxable. But businesses do pay taxes on their personal items. And the way that it works for sort of non-farm businesses is that if the total value of your property or personal property is less than $17,500, It is exempt. And so if you think about the way that that, and that's indexed for inflation, the way that that that's treated then means that these individual businesses must enumerate and file an application and demonstrate the value or attest to the value of their personal property to show that it's less than $17,500. And we're going to talk today about farm property that has statute that makes it exempt. So there's a sort of enumerated exemptions for farm personal property, and it's quite broad. And so the statute lists out the general exemptions for farm personal property, and that's part of the topic of discussion today. Okay. So just a little bit, well, actually we talked about that, so I'm gonna skip going back, sorry. Okay. So land is specially assessed, so that's the real property. Then when we're talking about farm personal property, one of the components or the processes that farms deal with is that their personal property is self-reported. So in discussing these bills and the questions that have come up, what's exempt and what's not exempt, or what is being considered as policy considerations here, that in speaking with the assessors, a lot of assessors are still attempting to keep a six-year rotation, appraisal rotation cycle. And some assessors are able to go out when there are places that are considered hotspots, or there's discrepancies, or there's new buildings. But if personal property from farms is self-reported, and then the individual on the farm is deciding that they think that something is exempt or it's personal property versus real property, they are constructing this list themselves and self-reporting. And so if there is personal property on a farm that result in a dollar reduction in tax liability, I just thought I would give an idea of what happens to that dollar. And so some of that money is a loss. So the revenue loss is a loss to local schools and governments of 34 cents and 51 cents. But then the other portion of that dollar, which is 15 cents, is shifted to other taxpayers. And that's an average for around the state. So areas that have a lot more bonds will be shifting more to other taxpayers because the bonds have to be paid sort of no matter what. And so that varies throughout the state based on how many bonds and local options that have been passed.
Jamie, could you please say that again, mm-hmm. another way, because, in part, because when I look at something and there's a dollar and then I see, how to put this, the shift to other taxpayers is different than the loss to schools and loss to local government, mm-hmm. but I hope you can just describe it differently.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So I'll describe it two ways. One way is, suppose, just to make my life simple, that there was a $100 reduction in the value of my property by exemption of a $100 piece of personal property. And that was $1 worth of taxation. So I get to pay $1 less. And I, in this case, say I own a farm. So that means that I pay a dollar less, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the schools and the government combined locally receive a dollar less. They're going to receive approximately 85 cents less. The reason is the other 15 cents that you know, so when we have our taxing districts and the taxes that we pay, they're composed of fire and schools and libraries and all these different taxing districts, that sort of layer cake that I gave in the other presentation, stacked on top of each other. But some of those parts of the layer cake, the taxes that we pay, are bonds. And so that's a dollar set obligation that needs to be paid annually, service on those bonds. And so if that needs to be paid and I'm not paying it, then that may be that you're paying some of that. So 85 cents is just lost, but then the rest of that 15 cents is distributed to other taxpayers. And the extreme example that I think of is if there's only two taxpayers in this room and both of our properties are assessed and mine gets exempted, you're going to foot the whole bill for the bond. That's a really stark example. Interestingly, in looking at Washington State, for instance, because they also have a rate and a budget or levy system combined in somewhat related to the way that we have our system. But because their levy system or the sort of budget component versus the rate tends to be triggered, then whenever somebody gets an exemption there, that obligation is transferred to another taxpayer. So that's that. Here we don't have the full impact because of our rate system transferred to other taxpayers, but there that tends to be the case.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so just some specific exemptions that are called out. So one of the things that you might notice if you were really wanting to go to sleep at night and reading lots of statute, is that some parts of the statute, when they call out exemptions, call out very specific items. And things like bees and butter, cheese, vermiculture supplies and products, these kind of fur-bearing animals, I thought was interesting to me. So some of the statute calls out very specific things, and then when we're talking about farming, some of the exemptions are things like machinery and equipment, and then it gives some characterizations of the machinery and equipment. So these are specific exemptions that are called out by statute versus some of the more general descriptions of property that is exempted. Okay. So just stepping away from words for a second, the way that farming has evolved a little bit and continues to change, the bottom right-hand picture is an example of traditional farming. It's very labor-intensive. You can see there's these trolleys that move through the farm. It's outdoors, and then there's these little bins that the greens are being put in to. And I can't tell if they're washed or rinsed or whatever, but they're sort of these very small trolleys that are sort of being moved through the field. And versus this extremely large machine that is also harvesting these salad greens. So it's pulling them up from the ground and it's doing the same job. It's much more capital intensive. I don't see there's one worker there. So it's less labor intensive. Both of these things look very much like movable property to me. So that's just sort of an example of how things are the same but different in farming. And then, so the question has come up in this committee of differences between farming and food processing, and sort of, is there a gray area or is there a bright line? And so I was looking at sort of some of this industrial, this is food processing. They're taking shredded carrots and salad bits and they're packaging it, has conveyor belts. This comes from a story in the New York Times talking about the mechanization of farming. And in the process of working on this presentation or project, I called around to different farms and facilities like Kettle Chips, and I called Willamette Pie Company and Fruit Company because they sort of seem to be an example of a local industry that's related to farming and food processing that is all over that spectrum. There's the blueberries, then they sell frozen blueberries, and they sell blueberry pies. And a lot of the places that I talked to, and Willamette Fruit Pies included, the food processing is that part literally a separate business from the farm itself. So they contract with like 100 and something farmers to get their blueberries. The blueberries don't come to them washed, but they come to them destemmed. They only take grade A, and from there they do the food processing. So some of the farms that I've talked to have expressed to me that the business practices being separate makes for like a cleaner business process and practice. So this is the previous slide was farming, this is food processing, and then when looking at this one, I thought, I don't know. So this is carrots. There's presumably sorting carrots from the description in the article. They're presumably sorting carrots along this sort of conveyor belt, and just sort of the scale of the machinery that's related to farming and food processing.
This has to be one of the most fun revenue committee hearings that we've ever had. Yes, you want a carrot.
Okay. And then I was just going to talk about the relevance to the bills. And HB 2130 was the first bill that we had up related to food processing. So I will point out that these bills are all related to different parts of the statute. And so this one is an exemption for food processing. You might recall that the first, upon application, new equipment for food processors is exempt for 5 years. So this is the part of the statute 307.455. One of the things about this is that makes it a little different is specifically because it's exempt for 5 years and then it has to come on the roll at the depreciated value after 5 years for food processors. That those dollar values and the value of that property has to be enumerated so that the value that's exempted and the value that comes on the roll is appropriately determined. And this is a sunset extension bill in this committee. I think it's set to sunset in 2022, and the extension is proposed to 2032. It's not a permissive policy, so if a company applies for this, then the statute states that they would receive the exemption if they qualify. And the tax expenditure report gives us the loss and shift, which we talked about a little bit before. I think that was section 2.
Can you let the committee know that since we're talking, excuse me, I am asking our Legislative Revenue Office economist to mention that in a prior presentation, we had an illustration of how 2130, mm-hmm. thank you, how 2130 was divided up. It's got a bunch of different parts, and I don't know if you'll be able to find it, but 2130 talks about many different kinds of things. And this is, you said, section 2
yes.
of that one?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So you guys might, the committee might recall that, and I think Austin might be able to pull it up, that I separated 2130 into...
It was March 5th.
the various components that were combined into the same bill for Sunset Extension. There was a golf course. There was the food processing. There was low-income housing. And then there were cargo containers and historic property. So we had all of those sections. This was what I called Section 2, and the bill called Section 2. And this, so what I'm dealing with today in this discussion is just the food processing part of that bill, which we called Section 2.
Thank you. And we do not intend to cover all those other topics or all those other sections today, but this is just sort of a reminder for us.
Okay.
It's a very extensive bill, and we're focusing on Section 2. Thanks much.
So,
That's you've completed the background information now for 2130, which also provides a lot of good refresher on real property, personal property, tangible, intangible, all of that. Is the committee set enough on those, all those background concepts before we open up the work session for discussion only on the other bills? Okay, I'm now opening a work session on House Bill 2429 and also a work session on House Bill 2264 so that we can dive in a little more closely to a couple other bills that relate to particularly farming or agricultural items.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So 2264 deals with farm personal property, and I will say that there seems to be an amendment, a dash two, and
before we talk about the amendment, could you just give us a little bit of a background? Mm-hmm. And there are two people in the room who I would like to ask to come up and tell us why we have an amendment, what the amendment is doing. Yeah, get ready to. Thank you.
Okay, there we go. So, So 2264 is the portion of statute, or deals with the portion of statute that exempts farm machinery and equipment. So personal property that is considered farm machinery and equipment for farmers. And so I would say that there were some key components of the bill, and subsequently in the language that's changed the dash two, there's terms that are included now, aside from machinery and equipment, called tools and implements. There's an existing in the statute, the exemption refers to preparing crops for storage. So what in my understanding is of the dash two, we now have a component that said would include in the exemption preparing crops for shipping as well. It attempts to list attributes of the property, and I'll let the individuals speak, that would make them identifiable as personal property and therefore exempt. So it gets into the wording of the characteristics. And then at the very bottom of the dash two, it defines or describes what would be considered processing and what would not be considered processing, and seeks to exclude food processors from the exemption. And I will just say that when I was speaking with the county assessors and conducting a survey, asking them when they were doing assessment of property on the ground, asking them to explain sort of the approach to me, many of the assessors identified that they looked to the section of the statute to decide whether somebody was a food processor or a farmer, and then subsequently just looked at the characteristics of the property to determine whether it was personal or real and how it would fit in to a specific exemption or tax treatment. And that's where we are.
Okay. Please identify yourselves. Why are you here?
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, I ask myself that every morning. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association of Nurseries. Just really quick, as a reminder, the nurseries are the state's largest ag sector, at just about $1 billion in revenue. They're a pretty large factor in the economy, especially here in the Willamette Valley. And we became interested in this issue just as a brief refresher because in 2017 and 2018, the Marion County assessor started to rethink kind of how they were assessing certain pieces of tangible personal property on a farm. And did I say my name? Elizabeth Remley, Association of Nurseries.
Thank you.
Sorry. I think the assessor in Marion County brought up a good question, which is, as the nature of farming changes and as we become more automated in certain ways because of workforce shortages and other things, what does tangible personal property look like versus real property? On a farm, real property is buildings and things installed in buildings. And tangible personal property for the purpose of this exemption are things that are movable. And you did ask a question about movable. Sam here for the Farm Bureau has some information for you about the case law around that word. But what we have talked about really in this issue is that we have a law that was put in place in the 1970s and legislative intent from that far back. And you know, 50, 60 years later, we're going to have machinery that looks a lot different. And so how do we update the law that we have without expanding on the original intent? Now, we don't necessarily think that we're going to have the exact same lines in statute about what's exempt and what's not that we do now. We probably will end up exempting certain pieces of equipment with this bill that weren't exempt before, but we actually may end up taxing things that were considered exempt before as well. So we think we're probably gonna have to move the line a little bit in one direction and in the other direction also, but we do think that this update is important moving forward to provide clarity in assessing for both the assessors and our nursery and farm members who have tax bills every year and they should be the same every year, and that piece of property should be assessed the same every year. And we have experienced a little bit of discrepancy in that, and we want to correct that. So just really briefly, on the notable text, the tools and implements piece, we have to go back. We're going to go back and talk to legislative council about that. We believe that that was an attempt by legislative council to be more clear in what we were talking about, because equipment and machinery may not actually include tools and implements, but if you think about what a tool or an implement is, it is probably the most movable thing on a farm in most circumstances, and so we want to make sure that was included. But we need to get some clarification from legislative council about why that went in. It wasn't a piece that we requested necessarily, but we don't disagree with the inclusion. And then we had a conversation with the assessors briefly about what is true harvest. So we wanted to make sure that a crop could be harvested. So an example of a seed cleaner, a seed isn't fully harvested until it has been separated from dirt and rocks that might have come up in the machine with the seeds. So a seed cleaner is part of harvest in that particular example when it's used on the farm by the same person who also harvested the seed. So I'm going to let Sam go into what the dash twos do in establishing a test that provides some clarity for the assessors. And the last thing I'll say really briefly is that we've really appreciated the work that the assessors have done with us to help us understand their process and to help them, help us help them do their jobs as well as they can.
So before you shift to the next speaker, I have a question for you.
Yes.
You mentioned that the seed is not considered fully harvested until it's separated from the soil and the dirt and the rocks. In a previous hearing, we heard a term, something like water rinsing?
Rinsing, yeah.
So to separate the seed, it seems like you wouldn't want to use water, but how does water factor into the processes that we're going to be discussing?
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, in harvesting of certain crops, not necessarily seeds, water rinsing is sometimes used. For example, on a watermelon, if you got 5 pounds of watermelon and a pound of dirt connected to it, you might spray it off really quick before you put it into storage, because if you were to store that watermelon with dirt on it, it would rot faster. So you do have to clean it off. So and that is considered preparing for storage. Storage is often part of a harvest. You don't necessarily harvest something and immediately put it out onto a truck and get it off the land. So harvest has been traditionally, storage is always considered part of harvest. And so if you have to prepare something for storage as part of that harvest, and that includes spraying a watermelon off, for example, we would consider that part of the process of harvesting and therefore.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, Samantha Baer, Associate Policy Counsel with the Oregon Farm Bureau. So I've done a lot of the legal research and analysis for this issue, and so I'm happy to walk through the mechanics of our amendment and to give you some of that background on the case law that already exists on what is movable, what is tangible personal property versus what is real property. And so I think Elizabeth touched on the shipping piece and the tools and implements piece. So I'm going to direct you to page 2, lines 20 through 28. That's the first part of our amendment. That's our definition of tangible personal property. And then the second part is the processing piece. And you can actually look at this as the exact analysis that the courts do and that the assessors do when they're on a farm. Step 1 is this tangible personal property versus real property? Step 2 is, if it is tangible personal property, then is it used for harvest or is it used for processing? So step 1 is our lines 20 through 28 on page 2. We created a definition of tangible personal property specifically for this section. And we did that because the issue that we have been trying to solve is that the courts have created their own definition of tangible personal property. And there's really 3 seminal cases. The first is 7-Up Bottling Company versus Department of Revenue, and that addresses statute 307.0203, which was shown on the screen earlier. That is the definition of tangible personal property as it applies to all tax laws. That is the broad definition of tangible personal property, even outside of the farm equipment context. And what 7-Up Bottling Co. came out with is that why it's important is that it gave us the definition and helped us understand what is real property, which it, if it is affixed to or erected upon the land, then it is real property. And you can think of a barn or a shed has been erected upon land and it's fixed to the land through foundations or whatever that might be. And then it also talks about if it's not real property, then it's tangible. And so that has to be freely movable. In the line case that best describes freely movable, it says, freely movable suggests something that, if not designed to be moved on its own wheels, rails, or pontoons, could easily be placed on such means of movement and then moved. So there's 2 following cases, which is Saunders versus Department of Revenue, which is a 1985 Supreme Court case, and then Columbia River Egg Farm versus Department of Revenue, which I think off the top of my head is a 1992 case. I don't have that exact date, but I can get back to you guys on that one. So Saunders actually describes, which is the standard that we use now, which is not only must it be freely movable, it must be movable in the ordinary course of business. So how they came to that conclusion is that they looked at ORS 307-400, which is actually the inventory statute. And in 1985, the inventory statute included the same language that we're looking at today, the farm machinery and equipment exemption. That existed in the inventory statute. And when it reached this conclusion that it must be movable in the ordinary course of business, it looked back in the legislative intent of 400, which is the inventory statute, which sought to exempt things like portable grain bins and tanks and totes. And if you think about it in real life, those are the bins that someone's out in the field, they pick up the squash and they put it in the bin and then they move it back into the barn to do whatever else they're going to do with it. It makes sense that bins and tanks or totes are moved in the day-to-day operations of a farm. In 2001, 307-400 was changed, and the language that we're talking about now was pulled out and now exists back into this statute. However, the issue is, the hiccup, is that courts are still applying that moved in the ordinary course of business language to the statute we're talking about now. And in our opinion, that does not meet the intent of this statute because there are plenty of pieces of equipment that are not real property, that are tangible personal property, that are not moved and moving every single day in business. They're sometimes, you know, they rest in place by their weight or they're lightly bolted down for safety reasons. They're not up and moving. So the first, that's a little bit of background law. I know that was kind of a bit of a fire hose right there, but what we believe that this definition of tangible personal property does, and it's fairly straightforward, it's an A and B and test, and I'm happy to go through the language if you guys have questions in detail, but it's pretty straightforward, and we think that this really matches the true intent of this exemption, in that it is narrow and that it will provide clarity in for the assessors on what is truly what we all think is real property and what we all think is movable, tangible, personal property and property that is capable of being moved fairly easily. So that is the first place. I'm happy to answer questions about that or I can move on to the next piece.
And I hope you can complete your comments to us within about another 3 or 4 minutes.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
The next piece is we do not want to include processing equipment in our amendment. So 4A specifically says this section does not apply to any equipment used for processing a crop into another product. That exact language comes out of the King Estate Supreme Court case, which talks about the transitional nature of moving something from what is a crop into a different product, such as in that case, the fruit that is grape into wine, a completely different product. Sub B, and then moving on to the next page, 1 through 4, processing means altering a crop in any way. That comes directly out of DOR's own rules. Sub B, however, processing does not mean sorting, boxing, packing, or cleaning a crop in preparation for storing or shipping the crop. So for us, this actually comes also out of a case called Pollock & Sons, Inc. versus Umatilla County Assessor or versus Umatilla County Assessors. And what we have realized and what Elizabeth already talked to us, for us, for our farmers, harvest doesn't end the second they walk through a barn. Harvest, a successful harvest, they have to safely get their crops into storage. For a Christmas tree, some Christmas tree farmers, they have to get that tree out of their field into a truck to get into the lot. If you didn't get, as my farmer told me, if I can't get my crop out of a field, I didn't have a harvest at all. And so we don't believe that packing a crop into a box or putting netting around a Christmas tree is processing it. We do not believe it is altering. It is still a tree at the end of the day, and very little has really been done to it except we safely got it from one place to the next. And so that is what the second piece attempts to accomplish.
And Chair Nathan, Senate members of the committee, just to follow up and finish up really quickly, where these groups that are working on this bill, we're not here to ask again for an expansion or a policy decision about whether we should have an exemption for certain types of farm equipment, we can have that discussion. We would certainly agree that it is very helpful to our members, and we would like you to keep it. But if we are going to continue this exemption, we should modernize it, and that is what we are attempting to do here.
Thank you both very much for being here to provide the background and explanation to us.
Thank you.
Representative Rush.
Just a comment. For my simple mind, it seems like it comes down to processing versus preparing for shipping. So are you, like they were saying, are you altering the product to become something else, or are you storing it, or are you just packaging it for storage? I think Representative Clem brought us a bill that was about picking up the leftovers on a field and putting it into cubes to ship to another country. And so the question is that now processing that, or is it preparing it for storage and preparing it for shipping? And in my mind, that's kind of where the delineation comes. And then because we're modernizing farming, we have different types of equipment we've never seen before. And so we're trying to decide what is the spirit of the overall law for farm exemptions in order to stay in that spirit with this new equipment.
Thank you. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. A question for you. Rep. Rushby went exactly where I wanted to go, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering if you have an opinion as to whether compressing and baling, which is the language that's included in the other bill, qualifies as preparation for shipping, or whether it's a whole nother beast.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, that is an amazing question. And the case, it's a 2018 case about hay balers that truly embodies the gray area nature of that exact question. And I think it is arguable. In my opinion, in my personal opinion, I do not think that baling hay changes it in any way. I don't think it changes the physical properties of it. I don't think it changes the chemical properties of it. It is still hay at the end of the day. It just makes it so that you can transport more of it in a cost-efficient and safe way. That is my personal opinion on that, though.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, I don't actually have an opinion about baling and hay, but I will tell you that our -2 amendment for House Bill 2264 would include some balers and not others. Mm-hmm. So the test about real versus tangible personal property is about whether something's installed in a building and therefore part of the building versus whether it's movable. So, for example, on the nursery, we have some potting plants that involve like a conveyor belt and some other pieces of equipment. Some of those move on a regular basis to different parts of the field, and others that are much larger are installed in one place on the farm. One of those types of potting equipment would be exempt under 2264-2, and one wouldn't. And I think probably under our bill, the test would be applied to a baler in the same way. So the really large balers that are installed in a building wouldn't be exempt under this bill. So if you wanted to exempt all types of certain farm activities, which is what the other bill does, then you can make that determination separately. Ours is really about the type of property that it is, not the type of activity we're doing.
Yes, and we do need to be sure to allow time for Jamie to finish up on the other bill.
Sure. Well, just a quick, thank you, Madam Chair, just a quick comment. I like what you've done in this in trying to determine the bright lines. We need bright lines here. It would just be great if we could move toward even more compression of our own statutes in terms of covering all the territory that they need to cover. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think your suggestion earlier in the day was right on the mark that we need a field trip. I've had multiple opportunities to see the compression of hay and straw and alfalfa. And quite often what occurs is the activity begins outside in the compression process. And then as the weather changes, stuff gets stored and they move the equipment indoors. And so quite often, just for matters of convenience, equipment that easily can be used outdoors and is used outdoors is brought inside and is attached. And so you've got this gray line out there. It would be just as easy for a farmer to unattach it and figure out another way to operate inside to meet a definition. But again, they do it out of convenience and sometimes out of safety. And so perhaps a tour would be worthwhile, because I've seen the equipment outside and then they just bring it in as the weather gets bad.
Thank you. Representative Reschke, real quick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If 2429 and 2264 were passed with the appropriate amendments, do you see any inherent conflict between those two bills, or do we create more of a mess and less of these bright lines that Representative Marsh talked about?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, to be honest, I have not read the other bill in enough detail and done an analysis to see where the overlap might be. As Elizabeth said, you have to get through step one first on our bill. And if your equipment is so massive, it is so integrated that it basically, the building's built around it, which some of those hay bale pieces, those hay balers are, the certain models are huge, as many pieces of equipment are, you're not going to make it in our test anyways. So there could be conflict in that point.
All right, thank you.
And Representative Smith, I know you're envisioning farms, but I'm also interested in aquaculture and shell egg industry operations. And at some point, I'm going to want Jamie to talk about drones and the drones that are owned by farmers and the drones that are leased from or operated by a separate business. And that's only half a joke.
Those other two are outside of my expertise.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, if I can interject, the Farm Bureau would be happy to host a tour for you guys if you would like to come out. I know our farmers would love it if each of you would want to come out and actually see their farms and see it in action. So we would love to set that up if you would like to.
Appropriate shoes and umbrellas. let's move now. Thank you. Let's
thank
move
you.
Now to hear Jamie tell us a little bit about the other bill. We've already opened the work session on it.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Okay, so as I mentioned, that the statute exempts some specific equipment related to specific industries, speaking of aquaculture. And so the House Bill 2429 seeks to add hay baling equipment and compression equipment to that list of exemptions. Now, the Dash 2 does something a little bit different or interesting. In this committee, and just now, you've discussed the question of whether something is owned by a farmer or if it's a contractor that would come in. And so the Dash 2 specifies that the hay baling equipment must be farmer-owned machinery and equipment, and then would seek to add that to the list of exemptions under 307-397.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Mr. Garst is prepared to provide comments on one or the other of these bills.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue. I just wanted to note that we have worked extensively with proponents on House Bill 2264, and we really appreciate the efforts that they've made. We think that we've gotten quite a bit further towards clarity, but I do want to note that I think we still have a little bit of ways to go. The language in the bill creates some new terms that might better be defined in the bill itself. So, you know, you have terms like readily movable, and as they describe, the court cases have kind of looked at, you know, whether or not you would normally move this equipment in your regular course of business. If you come in, I mean, as you noted, anything can be moved. You can move a house, right? But when you put all of these lines of equipment together, you bolt it all together, it's not meant to go anywhere. And that's been kind of the line that we've had as far as what real property is. And in 7-Up bottling, it was a lot of conveyor belts and that type of thing that they were talking about. A lot of the pictures that you saw are really demonstrative. They got all that equipment into that facility. They moved it in there, but they don't plan to move it out until the point that the facility is going to go out of operation. And so those are, that's kind of the line that we've seen before. And we just would, if we're going to change that line, I think we should just be very careful. The bill says that it's not fully integrated based off of extensive wiring or plumbing. I mean, fully and extensive, those are obviously terms that could mean different things to different people. And it goes on to say that removal of the equipment would cause minimal damage. And again, you can move this stuff out without taking down the building. And so this could be pretty broad. I don't think that's the intent, but I just think we should be careful. And then the last thing that I just have to note is that the processing definition, it does encroach a little bit into what it says processing is not sorting, boxing, packing, cleaning. Though that encroaches a little bit into the administrative rule that we've had, and that's fine. If you want to pull some of that, what has previously been considered processing by the department and by the courts, if you want to pull that into being exempt, that's a policy decision, perfectly fine for you to do that. But the dash one had previously said that food processing facilities are not included in the exemption. They have their own exemption, right? That language is not in here any longer. So if I was a food processor, the carrot operation that you saw, where I am basically sorting, boxing, packing, I could be exempt under this definition. And that is some very expensive equipment that you're talking about. A lot of that sorting equipment, they use either photos or lasers to sort this stuff. They have little air jets that pop out bad berries in certain facilities, and it's expensive equipment. And so I just want you to know that, you know, you could go that route too, but that would make it a little bit more expensive. So those are really my comments. As far as the second bill, this language does not, we just saw it today, but I don't think that there's an issue with the hay bale language. That is kind of a very clear example of how you might exempt certain equipment that you want to exempt. You just pop it into the property, into the list of real property that's exempted. You describe what it is, and you're done. So that one, I don't think that we would see much ambiguity in.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Smith.
And just very quickly, Madam Chair, in all fairness to the Department of Revenue, thank you for those thoughts. When you take tours of agricultural facilities, it becomes pretty obvious very quickly what is movable versus what is not. And so trying to figure out what that definition is may be challenging, but I think it's doable because you're right on the mark. I mean, some of that equipment, while it could be moved, it's pretty obvious it's not going to be. And so we just have to figure out how to define that.
Any other questions for Mr. Karst?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I just wondered about the clarity of farmer-owned machinery. I mean, that's the addition here, as I read it, is that the farmer has to own it. It can't be parceled out to somebody else or somebody else who comes on the property. We have a different way of approaching that question of ownership in the second bill. And so my question to you is, does farmer owned, is that clear enough? Is there ambiguity around that?
And before you answer, I'm gonna pile on. I'm gonna add to that. Could farmer owned include a consortium of farmers, right? Two or three or five got together to purchase a piece of equipment?
Chair Nathanson and Representative Marsh, I think those are both great questions and could certainly use a little bit more thought. I have not run that language past anybody, so I wouldn't really want to step out there on my own. But we have had a conversation about how it is that you might identify what equipment is owned by a farmer. So you could say that the person who owns the equipment is getting a special assessment for farm use somewhere. That might be one way that you could say it. And in your case of a co-op, you could say that all the members of the co-op have to be people who are receiving special assessment somewhere. But I think that this question is really interesting because you have seed cleaning as a good example. Some of it's done by a farmer on their farm, right? But then you have a different situation where you have what they call a custom seed cleaner, and that person might own a small industrial facility. All it does is seed cleaning. And the question is, do you want to exempt that as well? That person, to me, is not a farmer. That person is someone who operates a custom seed cleaning operation. So if they happen to also own a farm, would they be pulled in under that definition? I think that arguably they might. They might be a farmer. So I think that maybe it could, you could work on that a little bit. But generally the language that we like is, first of all, this goes into the real property area of the bill, and it says equipment used to compress and bale hay, harvested straw, and other plants for the purpose of storage or shipment. That is pretty clear on what it is. We would know that that hay bale compression equipment is exempted, so whether it's real or personal.
Got it.
Any other questions? I'm getting ready to close the work session. We will likely come back to this. Anything else for you to add? Okay, thank you everyone for a really good discussion. I see no other questions or comments on these two, so I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2429 and 2264, and we're adjourned.